Stay tuned for Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah, featuring two film critics with distinctly different tastes in movies, Charlie Jewell of charliejewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of chickflicks.net. He thinks her tastes are shallow. She thinks his are pretentious. Listen in as they discuss and debate new releases and other film-related topics. Let the clash begin.
Hello and welcome to the Cinema Clash. I'm Charlie Jewell of charliejewell.com.
And I'm Hannah Buchdahl of chickflicks.net.
And we have a lot to talk about on this episode, hitting just about every genre there is.
Yeah, we've got a star-studded comedy that's out just in time to mock all those office Christmas parties, and a tense drama about a high-powered lobbyist called Miss Sloan.
There's Jackie, starring Natalie Portman, which is the point of view of Jackie Kennedy in the immediate aftermath of her husband's assassination.
And there's a French film, of course.
What?
Yeah, wouldn't be Cinema Clash without one of Charlie's French films. But this one I actually did watch, and it's miraculously devoid of sex, violence, oppression, all the things that you usually like in a French foreign film.
Well, then it can't be a French film.
I know, so we'll see.
And we'll wrap things up with a documentary about the work of a very famous photographer named Harry Benson. He's probably taken all of the pictures that you recognize.
Yeah, no, it was amazing how many of the pictures that I saw in that documentary I knew of.
Well, we've been talking about this for a couple weeks, award season. Our awards are done. Washington, D.C. critics are done. They're in. They've been announced. But the real awards are still gearing up. And we actually have two awards that had studio backing for awards on the show, Jackie and Miss Sloan. But, of course, we're going to talk about the one that's going to make money. The first, Office Christmas Party. Did you laugh?
I did laugh. I didn't laugh hysterically for long durations, but I certainly chuckled enough throughout the movie to find it to be that perfect mindless entertainment for the holiday season.
I laughed mostly at the one-liners.
Yeah.
I didn't laugh at the idea of a crazy office Christmas party. That idea is, I guess I've never seen it before, but it feels old. Yeah. It's a setup, you know, because it's a company that's in trouble, and if they score this one big deal, they can stay open. And the one-liners are hysterical, mm-hmm. especially from people like T.J. Miller. If you remember him, he was the bartender in Deadpool.
Oh, right.
And he hosted last year's Critics' Choice Awards, I remember, because when I saw him do that, I was like, who are you? I don't even know
right.
who you are. And then I saw him in Deadpool, and now he's in Office Christmas Party. Okay. And this is also another Jennifer Aniston, Jason Bateman pairing. Would it shock you if I said this is their fifth time together?
That is amazing, because I remember them really just Horrible Bosses, which was actually a pretty decent movie.
What about the second one?
I didn't say Horrible Bosses 2. I said Horrible Bosses. And so, yeah, it is amazing how many times they work together. They don't have all that much interaction in this film, though.
They're coming up on, like, Katherine Hepburn and Spencer Tracy territory.
Oh, no. Come on.
No, I'm not talking about in chemistry. I'm talking about in number of films. I mean, yeah. They're becoming an item. Like, oh, okay, I see a Jason Bateman film. Where's Jennifer Aniston at?
And their roles seem very similar. They never stretch very far from...
you brought that up at the screening, and I agreed with you. Jason Bateman, Arrested Development, is, you know, he's playing the same character in every single movie he plays. Even The Gift, which was a mind twist, psychological thriller, even then, he's kind of still playing the same guy.
Yeah, and of course, I loved him as Nick Wilde in Zootopia.
Same guy.
same guy, but in animated wolf form. Or fox. I guess he was a fox.
Well, there's two directors here. We've seen some of their work before. Josh Gordon and Will Speck, they directed Blades of Glory, if you remember
right.
the Will Ferrell making fun mm-hmm. of ice skating. They also directed Jennifer Aniston and Jason Bateman in The Switch. I never saw that.
I never saw that one either.
I never saw that. And, of course, it has 1 million writers. Okay, it has three writers. But actually, it has three people who wrote the screenplay and three people who came up with the story. So six people are involved in this thing. And one guy, I guess, he's the only guy with credits. His name's Dan Mazur. He wrote Bridget Jones's Diary.
Okay.
No, sorry. Bridget Jones's Baby, not Diary.
Your favorite.
Baby. I didn't even see that one. But he also had a hand in writing Borat and Bruno. Mm. I love Bruno.
I could see that. There are definitely some punchlines in this movie that are smart and funny. And there's a lot of good comedy people in this movie. It's quite an impressive cast, which is why I think it does so well.
There's two Saturday Night Live people.
Yeah, I mean, Kate McKinnon, I just think is hysterical. I think she's so underrated. I know, at least where you're concerned, she's underrated.
She is. She's right. She didn't burn
me
out of water.
I found her character just very funny, and right down to her ugly sweater. She plays the head of HR, so, you know, she's the one telling this the guys at this company that they really need to keep the office party in check, which, of course, it's not.
Great Christmas sweater.
Great Christmas sweater that represents every faith. So it was.
She's the one who says it's not a Christmas party. It's a non-denominational holiday mixer,
yeah,
which is more inclusive.
That's right. I love that. And, yeah, so she's very funny. There was also the woman who played the Uber driver.
I don't know who that
was. Yeah, I don't know who it was, but she was very spot on, very funny. Jennifer Aniston and Jason Bateman, you know, aren't in it together very much, and so the chemistry is supposed to come between the relationship of Olivia Munn and Jason Bateman. So
which is an afterthought in the film.
Yeah, and so it seemed like they were trying to set that up early on, but there really wasn't all that much chemistry between those two.
Well, the film, the idea of the film feels late. Do you remember when, a couple years ago, Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson did the internship at Google?
Oh, yeah.
And that was like, that was 10 years late. Like, that was just, that was way too late.
Yeah.
This feels, the message here is that, this is a different era. You could do things back then that you can't do now. Dress codes are enforced. There are such things now as inappropriate gifts and inappropriate touching. And this is a movie for 10 to 15 years ago. It's not, everyone knows you can't get blitzed at the office Christmas party now. It's an old message. There are funny parts. You name the people you like. I like Jillian Bell as the pimp.
Yeah, she was funny.
She was funny. And there's the stereotype people. Who have their one thing. There's the guy with the fake girlfriend.
Oh,
there's
right.
The single mom. She's defined by being a single mom.
Right.
There's
Vanessa
the HR.
Bayer,
the other SNL person, Vanessa mm-hmm. Bayer. And there's the HR Nazi. And she's defined as that. They have one dimension. They have one trait. And that they never will ever. And just like all movies like this, all comedies like this, they'll never venture out from that trait.
It's a very formulaic movie for sure. It's predictable. You know that it's.
Really? Do you think they're going to save the company?
Okay, with the company being saved, it has a few surprises in there that are just a little shocking.
There's a basketball player who shows up.
That's right. There's the basketball.
I won't
player.
Say who it is.
And Courtney B. Vance, who plays the potential client that they're trying to woo, who's supposed to give them the lucrative contract they need to stay in business, and he ends up. It's one of those typical gags where, you know, there's like a snow machine and some coke gets mixed up in there.
Yeah, when I first saw the snow machine, you're like, cocaine.
Yeah.
Cocaine's going in there.
Yeah. And so you can kind of figure out where it goes from there. So it's not brilliant. It's not completely original, but it was funny. It was fun.
It's better than Bad Santa, too.
Exactly. The bar has not been set very high for holiday movies.
It's
comedies.
No National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. It's no A Christmas Story.
But it's no Bad Santa 2, thank goodness, and it's also, you know, what's the other one, Almost Christmas that was out. I mean, there's...
Nobody saw it.
Exactly. So there's nothing better. So it's first, you know, when they talk about how it's the...
That's the best thing we said. There's nothing better.
There's nothing better in terms of
except for the next few movies we're going to talk
about. Comedy. No, in comedy.
Oh, there's, in theaters right now probably is the best
comedy,
I guess.
So the best comedy for the holidays. It's the only comedy for the holidays. So if you're looking for a comedy... It's there. And it's fun. It's fun in the moment, for sure.
I laughed.
Yeah.
I did. I mean, there's some obscene humor in there, and I appreciate obscene humor.
Yeah, and a couple of ugly sweaters, and, you know, what more do you want?
Well, if you want to see something good, I mean, but, you know, you're in the mood for something other than a comedy, and just something good,
mm-hmm.
and a powerhouse female lead performance, Jessica Chastain in Miss Sloan, go behind the scenes of lobbyists. A lot of people, they know the term. They don't know what they do. And once you learn what they do, you might not like that very much. Did you feel the tension in the film?
Yes, it is what's known as a morally bankrupt profession, I believe. And the tension throughout, this movie is great for all the twists and turns that it takes. Because you really think at one point that it's going in one direction, then it goes in another, and then you're not quite sure. And it's very witty dialogue. Excellent dialogue.
It's Aaron Sorkin fast.
It is. It's West Wing-ish in the way it's portrayed. And really good cast. So Jessica Chastain carries this movie. Absolutely. I mean, it is. You are just watching her. It's a very compelling performance. But she's got a really good supporting cast around her, too. And Gugu Mbatha-Raw, she is just a... She's been phenomenal in the past couple of years. She was in Belle.
She's great in Belle.
I saw her in this one called Beyond the Lights that absolutely nobody saw, but she had incredible talent in that movie as a singer. And so it's just... I think she was in Concussion last year. So she is... she's really good in this movie. She plays sort of this idealistic gun control advocate. And who's sort of used in the campaign.
Well, she's the lobbyist who believes in what she's selling.
Yeah.
Apparently, but that's why she's like bottom rung. Apparently, the top lobbyists, it doesn't matter what they believe. They want to win most of all. And they'll break and bend rules to do that. They just want to win. Jessica Chastain could be the most pro-gun control person or most anti-gun control person. It doesn't matter. She's been hired by this person to take this stance.
Yeah, and the movie really is about her... the idea that she might be shifting gears and suddenly have a conscience about what she's doing. And that's where it becomes almost a cat and mouse kind of game, and you don't really know whether or not she has truly found a conscience in what she's doing or if it's all part of the larger game.
Well, it is a game, and it's set up that way because it's told in flashback. We start immediately. She's in a Senate hearing room, and she's getting grilled, and she keeps taking the fifth. And then they jump back in time however many months to tell us how we got to the Senate hearing. And, you know, it's setting us up for a twist. I can feel it coming. She even says it early on. She gives her game away, you know, never play your trump card until they play theirs. And I'll admit I got confused once. Who I thought was her assistant at the first firm. She's played by Allison Pill. She's the one, Jessica Chastain quits the firm, this blue chip firm where she's making seven figures. The Second Amendment lobby comes calling, the NRA comes calling. They said, we want you to get women to defend guns. And she's like, no thanks. And she goes and works for the opposition where there's no money, but she wants to do it to win because if she wins against the NRA, she'll be the most famous lobbyist who ever wins. But someone doesn't go with her, and it's the girl you think, I thought it was Kirsten Dunst.
Oh,
it looks exactly like Kirsten
no.
Dunst. It looks exactly like her. No. Same with like Kristen Bell. It also looks like Kristen Bell. They all look alike. And it's actually an actress named Allison Pill. And man, through the whole movie, I was like, ooh, Kirsten Dunst in this movie. Kristen Bell's in this movie.
I did not think that, but it did. It was just a very intense political thriller. So I think anyone who likes that kind of drama should definitely seek this one out because it's just good.
And I was excited because it takes place in Washington, D.C. You see some the establishing shots of the monuments and the mall. And, of course, it was filmed in Toronto.
Oh, sorry.
But it was directed by John Madden. We know him from Shakespeare in Love fame and both Best Exotic Marigold Hotels. Mm-hmm. This is not his genre. This is not what he does. He came closest, I think. He directed Chastain in her breakout film, The Debt. If you remember The Debt from like 5 years ago.
Hey, so, I thought John Madden was the telestrator guy on the NFL shows.
This is the other John Madden who he doesn't direct stuff like Miss Sloan. He directs Shakespeare in Love, and this is not his style.
Well, but he pulls it off. It's a very well done movie, and I thought I had it figured out at one point, and then I was surprised.
And you mentioned that you liked the script, you liked the screenplay so much and the dialogue. First time screenwriter.
Wow.
He was a British lawyer. Never really been to the U.S., doesn't know anything about D.C., and he pulled this out.
Good for him.
That is shocking.
That is. That's good to know that there are some first-time screenwriters out there who can maybe make it in Hollywood, because we've certainly seen a lot of really bad stuff get made, and you always wonder how that happens when there are really good writers out there with really good original material. It's just hard for them to break in.
But Miss Sloan, in my opinion, is not the best Oscar bait movie this weekend.
I will disagree with you there. I think that Jessica Chastain has a phenomenal performance in Miss Sloan. However, I do think that she will lose out in any Oscar race to Natalie Portman, who is in Jackie this weekend. For me, Jackie, about Jacqueline Kennedy and the immediate aftermath of JFK's assassination, is not a great film. I think Natalie Portman's performance is amazing and Oscar-worthy, but the movie itself dragged for me for big chunks in the middle.
I think Jackie is in my top five films of the year. It's one of the best films I've seen in a long time. Natalie Portman is my choice for best actress. No one's better than her. And so I was not alive when all this was going on. But I've seen Jackie Kennedy talk, interviews and that famous clips of that famous tour of the White House. Mm-hmm. Natalie Portman's accent is, I just loved listening to it, but is it, I assume it's spot on because, she does her research and everyone says it's spot on, but Jackie Bouvier was born and raised on Long Island. Do they speak kind of French up there? Is that a boarding school, Northeastern thing? The way she pronounces words.
She's
like, are you speaking American?
She has a very lilting, definite, soft-spoken...
We're going to create a legacy for Jack.
Yes.
Okay, Mr.
Really,
Valenti.
But if you go and you watch the original, that footage of the White House tour, you will note that she obviously, that Natalie Portman studied up on that a lot.
Because they film it kind of set for set. Same shots. There's Mexican, remember Forrest Gump did Mexican matching of kind of real footage? They did that again here.
Yeah.
I think there was shots of the procession in D.C., which was from the real thing. When they get off Air Force One at Love Field in Dallas, I think was also the real thing. So there's times I was watching it, wait, is this new footage or is this old grainy footage? I'm not sure. So it kept me on my toes a little bit there.
Yeah, it was an interesting narrative device, too. I see where they were trying to go with it. So they essentially just, the narrative is framed in the fact that she gave this exclusive interview to Life magazine just a week after the assassination. That was, to me, the most amazing thing to realize, was how soon after the assassination she invited this Life magazine reporter to, I think, Hyannisport or something, to do this interview with her. And it shows how very controlled and conscientious she was in exactly how she was going to portray herself. And exactly
she's chain-smoking.
Yeah.
And tells the reporter, I don't smoke.
And so I learned a lot of interesting things about this. And everybody can then go and actually go back and look at this article and see it in a completely different light now, which is fascinating. But she really did know exactly what she needed to do to preserve JFK's legacy and to make sure that it was because he had a past.
But she has a legacy of being known for class and good looks, not for her brain. But she is the smartest person in the room in this movie. She wants to study Lincoln's funeral. Why is Lincoln so beloved now? Because he went out with a big bang of a funeral. She asked the ambulance driver, have you ever heard of someone called Garfield McKinley? The other two presidents who were shot. He's like, no, I never heard of them.
That's right.
And she tells you the real story of sitting in the back seat of that convertible with her husband's brain spilling out all over her lap. And she tells the reporter, played by Billy Crudup, in vivid detail. And she says, of course, I'm not going to allow you to publish a word of that.
Yeah, and I'm not sure you'd get away with that anymore. Too much leaks out. It's much more difficult to try and... the press had a very different relationship back then with presidents and with all politicians. And there was a lot that was just kind of... you maintained almost a cordiality that doesn't exist anymore. And nowadays, it would be automatic that it would leak out. So if she was smoking, that would be known. If she was saying, you can't strike something or say something's off the record after you've already said it. But she went on to become, she was a very well-known editor and publisher. And so she was smart. And so I think people discovered later on just how very smart she was and that... And then I had no idea that she's the one who really coined the Camelot analogy.
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
And so, but I also thought at the end, they overdid it with the Camelot. It went on and on and
you're
on.
You're crazy. You don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, my goodness.
I was very surprised to see the director, Pablo Larraine. He directed 2012's No, which was nominated for Best Foreign Film. That was about the Chilean vote that got Pinochet out of power.
Oh, okay.
He also directed last year's The Club, which was about a pedophile priest shut up in that house. I don't know if you saw that.
I don't think I did.
There's a bit too much canine abuse in that movie for me. But I'm very surprised that they gave him such a vehicle that they knew was going to be Oscar-bound. And, he's been nominated before, but he's not an American. And he's taking on probably the most American story there is. And man, did he pull it off. And the writer, this guy, Noah Oppenheim, already won Best Script, I think, at Venice. Gonna get shortlisted for the Oscar. He wrote, this is his first screenplay.
Another
he adapted,
one.
No, but he's an adapter. He adapted The Maze Runner and Allegiant. They picked that guy.
Wow.
Well, I guess he came to them with the script.
He must have known somebody.
Yeah, that guy is capable of this script who adapted Allegiant. The second half of his film didn't get made.
Well, you know, that's what happens. And people are drawn to different types of material for different reasons. And it could be that it was like, he might have made more money doing the others.
Oh, yeah, I guarantee you he made way more money with that.
So, you know, you kind of do what you got to do, and you pick and choose your projects, and you hope that by doing some of the ones that aren't necessarily so great, that you'll get your shot at the better ones. I would not put Jackie in my top five, but I do put Natalie Portman at the top of the list for Best Actress.
I'm really surprised that you say it dragged. I was nailed to my seat. I couldn't wait to see what was... It's not a biopic. It's not. It's a study of a...
It's a psychological portrait.
No, it's a study of a very probably the most private person who ever lived, and you're seeing perhaps what her humanity was like underneath that. And we've seen JFK from Oliver Stone about talking about the shooting. We've seen it in Parkland about the hospital staffers who had to take care of JFK when they wheeled him in. Never really seen it from someone who's in the car. And how can you find this boring?
I just remember thinking it just felt very slow. And I wasn't alone in that, because I saw it at Middleburg Film Festival with a bunch of people. We had just seen... I think part of the reason is that we had just seen so many really good movies all in a row.
It was like your second movie of the festival.
No, it was the Saturday.
It was
the
morning.
Weekend. It was
so
Saturday.
You saw
I'd seen
Lion
Thursday,
already.
Friday. This was like my fifth or sixth movie. I had seen Lion, Moonlight, I think Manchester by the Sea. I had seen so many movies before I saw this one. And so to me, it just didn't break through above any of those others. And I think my expectations were so high, and the buzz was so great going into this screening. And I just, I didn't think it was all that great. It was interesting. I'm glad I saw it. I think anybody who likes political history and, you know, there are a lot of people who've been very obsessed with Jackie. I think it provides a really good glimpse into who she was. But as a whole, the movie reminded me of when Meryl Streep was in Iron Lady, and that was in 2011. And Meryl Streep won Best Oscar for her portrayal of Margaret Thatcher, and that movie was really not very good. This movie's much better than that movie was.
This movie's way better than the Iron Lady.
It's way better than the Iron Lady, but it was another example for me of a movie where one person's performance was better than the movie as a whole, and she's phenomenal. Natalie Portman, but didn't love the movie.
Well, she will be nominated for an Oscar, but they're just not going to hand it to her. She's going to have to compete. And one person I think she will have to compete with is Isabelle Huppert. She's going to have to compete with her from Elle, which we've talked about a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. But Isabelle Huppert is in another movie this week called Things to Come. In French, it's L'Avenir. And this one, you mentioned it off the bat. It shocked you because it's a French film without... Well, pretty much anything awful in it.
Yeah, well, and having just seen Isabelle Huppert in Elle, which I can't say I liked Elle. I thought it was her performance again. She's really good. I don't think she can compete with Natalie Portman because I just don't think enough Americans...
No, but she'll pull a nom out of it.
She might pull a nom out of it, but I don't think enough Americans actually see this woman in her... and she's almost like, I would say, she's sort of France's Meryl Streep. I mean, she is really good in everything that she does. And she's very good to watch, especially when you figure, you know, I'm watching with subtitles. I'm learning a lot of French this year, Charlie. this one, whereas she was like under, you know, reliving this horrifying rape every 5 minutes in Elle, this movie was thankfully devoid of that. And she plays this philosophy professor. And the movie really is about... It just draws a lot of metaphors between philosophy and life, and this woman's entire life is somehow unraveling at the same time. Her husband of 25 years decides to leave her. Her kids are grown and getting out of the house. Her her crazy mother finally, you know, dies. She's been dying for years, and she actually does die at the same time all this other stuff is going on. And she gets fired from one of her jobs. It's like one thing after another, and suddenly she has to reinvent herself.
It is. I think it's just a movie that you can peg as middle-aged transformation. You described what would normally be a lot of drama there. My mother's dying. My husband left me. My kids are gone. And one just had a baby. But none of it is especially dramatic. It's not melodramatic. She doesn't sit down and wail. She doesn't shake her fist. She just kind of, you know what, I'm going to go on vacation for the weekend to this farmhouse and maybe teach class. She's kind of, like Elle got up after her rape and walked it off. This lady kind of just walks it off, everything that happens to her. And I think it's just a good time to watch. It's not going to blow your hair back.
Yeah.
But it's not going to bore you either. She's fun to watch. And it's unlike, this is why you can tell it's French. An American company right now, especially in the recent climate, would never make a movie about an elitist, a blue-blooded philosophy elitist. Or if they did, they'd make fun of them for being out of touch with the common man. And you know what? She's very intellectually elite, but she seems just as common as the next person.
Yeah, she does manage to walk that fine line where she seems like the every woman, but at the same time, she's definitely an intellect, and she's constantly reading and rereading her philosophy books. It's not a very exciting movie. It's not very dramatic. It does just kind of plod along, but you just kind of plod along with her, and she is just really good to watch, and you just see so much just on her face.
Did you notice the cat? Like in
Pandora.
In L, there's Marty, who just jumps around the house a lot, and he watches the rape, and in this one, it's Pandora.
Yeah.
And the cat, and both of them, like, move plot.
That's true. I wonder if...
Like, what's going on with all the cats?
I wonder if they were related, and if there was, like, you know, a litter that just ended up getting a lot of French francs out of this.
Well, this one, it's... The writer-director is Mia Hansen-Løve. I've seen one other movie of hers called Eden. Man, that stunk. That was about an up-and-coming DJ collective in Paris, and it was terrible. And this one is not terrible. In fact, she won Best Director at the Berlin Film Festival, which is a major, major film festival. That's a big win for her. So good honor for getting Isabel to play this role. And it sounds boring, but it's not.
Yeah, I couldn't quite put my finger on why I kept watching, because it's usually the type of movie that I would not get invested in. And I do think you have to... It is for the foreign film crowd still, for the most part. Those are the ones that are going to seek it out, mostly just because I think this is Isabel's year to sort of break through a little bit in the consciousness of the international audience. And the fact that she did Elle and this one back-to-back, or that they came out back-to-back, is pretty phenomenal, because suddenly you're just like, wow, she's everywhere.
Well, the art house people in America should already know who she is. She was in Amour. Won the Oscar a couple years ago for foreign film. I remember her from The Piano Teacher back in like 2001. Crazy, man, you think Elle was crazy? I should make you watch The Piano Teacher.
Yeah, thanks.
The last one we're going to talk about is a documentary, and it already has a connection. We talked about Jackie, and in Jackie, Peter Sarsgaard plays Bobby Kennedy. And he was kind of Jackie's right-hand man in that film. And in Harry Benson, Shoot First, about the photographer Harry Benson, RFK, Bobby Kennedy, plays a major role early on. Harry apparently has been, he's like Forrest Gump, he's been everywhere in American history, even global history. And he was there that night Bobby Kennedy got shot. And instead of putting the camera down and maybe like doing some CPR or putting his hand over the blood, he grabbed his camera, click, 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 and got all those shots you've ever seen of RFK lying on the floor of the ballroom in the kitchen. And, you know, people interviewed, some of them didn't like that. They said that was paparazzi. And then Harry boldly, confidently says, you know what, you only say that because you wouldn't have the guts to do what I did.
And other people came to his defense and basically like, what could he have done? You know, you see all these people have surrounded Bobby Kennedy and are tending to him. But I think, you know, for him, his defense is it's all sort of instinct. But they also, he shot, it was amazing to watch. I think it was too long. It did kind of go on a little long, and you just sort of for a documentary. It's interesting. It's fascinating to see how many different things he shot. But you will recognize all these iconic shots with the Beatles having their pillow fight in Paris before they really hit it big in America. And you know, just...
He got Muhammad Ali punching him.
Yeah, Muhammad Ali. And he, he created the environment for some of these iconic shots, too. So the movie actually talks about how he set that up, that they had free time and he was looking for some more shots to take with the Beatles. Muhammad Ali was training nearby. And he kind of set it up for the Beatles and Ali to be in this photo shoot together. So that was kind of cool. Just everything that you see, you go, oh, wow, that was his too?
Apparently he did everything. Like he did Nixon very well, and he's very kind of sympathetic towards Nixon.
Mm-hmm.
But he also stalked Greta Garbo,
yes,
the second most private person who ever lived after Jackie Kennedy.
I want to be alone.
And he stalked her on the beach and got her in the water.
As in, you know, and when she was much older and when she did not want to be photographed because she really wanted to be remembered from her glory days. And so, like,
interviewed
her nephew.
Everybody in this film. They dug up Greta Garbo's nephew to interview. What do you feel about that?
Yeah, and he was pissed because he thought that that Greta certainly felt that her privacy had been violated with that photo. And, you know, the way that Harry defends everything is that, you know, he has an incredible work ethic and he gets to wherever he needs to be to capture whatever moment he can capture. And some of it's serendipity. Other things are because he put himself in a situation where he could stumble upon some amazing shots and people liked him. So he endeared himself to all these
people.
Michael Jackson.
Yeah. Donald Trump
is interviewed
a couple times in this movie. And so they always tell you the name and who they are, actor, actress, musician. This says Donald – it'll tell you when this is filmed. Donald Trump, real estate entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And he says, I love Harry.
Yeah.
I don't care what he shoots as long as I look good.
I suspect Harry will be invited to the White House soon to take a photo. And he took this iconic photo that people might remember of Donald Trump actually holding $1 million. And they talk about how that shot was created and that it had to be $1 million and everything that they went through to get that $1 million in that shot that day.
That's at the opening of the Taj Mahal.
Yeah. And so it's but there were so many. I mean, it was politician Johnny Carson. He had better access to Johnny Carson than anybody.
Joe Namath.
That was a weird story with Joe Namath and some and you know, other photographers who there was a mix that obviously just you can't tell it's bordering on jealousy but also respect for these pictures that he's gotten. So anybody who's into photography, he's sort of the...
Or even just history.
History, because it is. It's amazing to see all this stuff through. There's a very good soundtrack.
You know, I'm going to forget this movie.
I will, too.
It's forgettable.
It's completely forgettable, but it's one of those ones that you just kind of went, I remember the pictures more than I'll remember the movie.
Yeah.
And I am amazed that this one guy is the one responsible for all these different images. He's sort of like the Annie Leibovitz of everyone. In terms of all different kinds of shots. So whereas people seem to know her name more, I don't think people necessarily knew Harry Benson's
name. Seth heard Annie Leibovitz. I know who that is.
Right.
I did not know who Harry Benson was. We just don't run into Sharon Stone appears to be in love with him. And I do not know who that guy is.
Yeah, and that's part of the amazing thing. This is the kind of documentary, though, that I kind of wish we saw more of, like that AFI docs, that it would have been a really nice one for there to be showcased at one of these festivals because we see so much that's... just so kind of borderline weird and out there. And this is just one of those stories and collection.
This is no Tickled.
It's no Tickled. But it's an interest. It's a collection. And to just see everything in one place is fascinating. But you're right. I will not it's not like somebody will ask me, what documentary should I go see in 6 months? And I'll remember this one.
No, I won't remember it. I'd recommend like my... father-in-law go see it because you know it's history and people don't really like Jackie. Anyone who remembers that stuff's gonna go see it. Same with this one. They grew up with these pictures, so they probably would like to go see it again. But
and I'll let Artie Chick will definitely go and see it because she's got a photography background and I can see her really enjoying this one.
Well, next week we got a big one. We got Star Wars, and that's the biggest one. But looking back on it a year from now. La La Land will probably be the one that people still remember and talk about. Because right now, no one talks about The Force Awakens anymore. But so next week, we do have Star Wars. But probably the eventual Best Oscar, Best Picture winner, La La Land, is next week.
And deservedly so.
So to quickly recap, this week, Office Christmas Party. Yeah, you know, if you want to laugh, I guess.
Yeah, it's the only comedy out there. So if you want a comedy, that's it. The only good comedy out there.
The only good comedy out there. Miss Sloan.
Really compelling watch, and I liked it better than Jackie.
I really liked Miss Sloan. I really liked it a lot, but it comes nowhere near the masterpiece that is Jackie.
Natalie Portman will win Best Actress, but the movie itself will not win Best Picture.
No, it won't win Best Picture, but I think it'll be nominated for Best Picture.
We'll see.
Another French film, but one that's kind of palatable to, you know, it won't give you nightmares for once. Things to Come.
Yeah, if you like reading philosophy, then definitely. And you like foreign films, this is the movie for you.
You do not have to like reading philosophy to like this movie.
I'm saying if you like reading philosophy and you like foreign films, you will love this movie.
I think if you're in a book club that drinks wine instead of reading the books, I think you'd like this movie.
I don't think so, but hey, we'll see.
Harry Benson, Shoot First.
It's just a good collection of iconic photos that you might never have known were all done by one guy. So
it's a palate cleanser.
Absolute palate cleanser. And it's available, I believe, on iTunes and Amazon. And so you're not going to necessarily find that one on the theater, but it actually is one that you might want to just call up and download and watch.
Yeah, that'd be a good video on demand film. So, as always, thank you for listening to The Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell.
I'm Hannah Buchdahl.
Thank you.
Take it.
Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah is presented twice each weekend on RadioSt.Pete.com at 5:15 Eastern on Saturday and 9:15 on Sunday mornings. Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net. Listen again for Cinema Clash on RadioSt.Pete.com.